With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Back in on the drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the radio.com app. Coming up in about 15 minutes, we'll give you a chance to win a large pizza from my friends over at the other place. All you need to do is keep it locked in right here on 610 Sports Radio. And one of everybody's favorite athletes has turned into an old hater. We'll talk about that coming up in just a little bit. I have a quiz question for you all. Sean, who do you think it is the New York Jets' leading rusher this year?
I'm gonna go with Le'Veon Bell.
Le'Veon Bell is not the correct answer for who is the leading rusher for the New York Jets. The answer is Frank Gore. Yes, that Frank Gore. Frank Gore, listen to this. This blew my mind. Frank Gore backed up Clinton Portis at the University of Miami and is still playing in the NFL. I'm serious.
They're gonna get you.
Frank Gore was on the 2001, the 2001 Miami Hurricanes, and is currently leading an NFL team in rushing. He joined the NFL. He got drafted in 2005. And Frank Gore is still in the NFL and still a productive player. Of all the things that happen in the NFL, that has to absolutely blow your mind. Like the fact that Frank Gore has continued to be this productive at this point in his career and still a viable option for a team is absolutely mind-blowing to me that he is still in the league.
I'm trying to think of some other dudes that either played on that team or in that era and how long they've been out of the league and what they've been up to. Ken Dorsey played for like a minute and we never heard of him again. I don't know what the hell he's doing. He might be hanging out with our boy Sinbad. Jeremy Shockey, I think he was on that team. Dude's been out of the league for at least a decade. I'm pretty sure Kellen Winslow Jr. is in jail. If I'm not, like, I don't want to slander anybody, but I'm pretty sure he's behind bars. Like, there's just that's incredible. Whenever you talk about should we put this guy into the Hall of Fame because of longevity, my answer is usually, is that the main reason? Like, for Phillip Rivers, to me, that's the main reason. What game did Phillip Rivers play? What's the season that you remember that Phillip Rivers had, right? What's the play that he made? We're just going to put him in because the stats are good because he played forever. With Frank Gore, the position that he plays, I'm willing to put you in because of longevity, because not only are his stats better than average, how many players ever, Carrington, at the running back position have done it for 19 years? That doesn't even sound right.
Yeah, no, not a lot of people. So listen to this, because it really blew my mind, this stuff about Frank Gore. So we're talking about
average lifespan for an NFL running back. Sorry to cut you off, because I just looked it up. 3.1 years when you get drafted in the NFL at that position. So, I mean, he's lasted six times longer than the average NFL running back.
So we're talking about this because Frank Gore is the leading rusher for the New York Jets. Absolutely blows my mind. So Frank Gore was a freshman on the 2001 Miami Hurricanes team, who some argue is the most talented college football team in the history of the sport. Listen to who the five leading rushers were on the 2001 Miami Hurricanes. Clinton Portis, Willis McGahee, Frank Gore, Nave Davenport, and Jared Payton. Those were the five leading rushers on a college football team back in 2005. On defense, they had Ed Reed, Phillip Buchanan. We're not even talking about a wide receiver, that they had Andre Johnson and Jeremy Shockey and Kellen Winslow. You can't have a college football team that has more talent than that team in 2001 for the Miami Hurricanes.
And a lot of people don't know this, Frank Gore actually created the internet later on that year. So, yeah, I mean, you can't really do much more on your resume than that guy has.
No, you're not. And going back to the 2005 draft, so this is the draft that that he was actually in. The top five picks in that draft, Alex Smith, who's still in the NFL, Ronnie Brown, you remember him out of Auburn, Braylon Edwards, he was the number three overall pick to Cleveland, Cedric Benson, remember him from Texas, and Cadillac Williams. Those were the top five players that year in the draft, and Frank Gore is still ticking.
Wow.
It absolutely blew my mind today when I started researching about the New York Jets, and I saw that their leading rusher on the season is, yes, that Frank Gore, who played for the San Francisco 49ers in 2005, who has been in the league that long. He leads the Jets in rushing.
It's crazy because some of those names that you brought up, like, they made a little bit of a mark in the NFL. So Cedric Benson's passed away since then. You got Cadillac Williams. Like, those running backs from Auburn, both for a minute, made a huge impression, and then they completely went away, and then you got Frank Gore. I'm being serious, and maybe Rob can look it up. I can't imagine that there's been a running back in the NFL that's had more seasons, especially as like a feature running back, because Frank Gore's been the starter on pretty much every single team he's played on from the beginning to the end, whether it was the Niners or the Jets, whatever team. He's played on a bunch of teams now at this point. That has to be some sort of a record at that position. You just take too many hits. That's why most of these guys play for a few years, get injured, and then either go into real estate or made enough money to retire and, you know, live on their investments type thing. I mean, if you're Frank Gore and you're still playing, how old's Frank Gore? 74? That's insane.
You know, it's absolutely crazy. I want to play this audio for you because I'm not going to lie. I've been really disappointed these last couple of weeks that some of our legends have become old haters. I heard Shaq on a podcast. He was talking mess on Dwight Howard after the championship game. Shaq's supposed to be somebody who embraces the younger generation, who kind of puts his arms around guys, not getting in a Twitter and podcast beef with the future fellow Hall of Fame player in Dwight Howard. I want to play for you guys what Bo Jackson had to say on Deion Sanders' podcast, a sentence I never thought I would say.
In football, I'll say the same thing. Nobody wrap up and tackle no more. With me being a ball carrier, my coach taught us number one. He said, I know you can run, but I'm going to teach you how to carry that football. He said, that football is like your newborn baby. Don't ever put it on the ground and keep it away from the enemy. It's like this. And I watch technique. I don't see nobody hitting or wrapping up. Everybody's running into each other and trying to use their shoulder pads back to knock the ball carrier down. And I'm like, if I play during this era, I'd be averaging 350, 400 yards a game.
Sean, there's some people I never want to hear talk about back in my day. There's some people that I don't want to hear sound old. You know how Bo Jackson sounds in that clip? Old. Back in my day, we really tackled. If I played today, I would have had 300 or 400 yards. Not Bo. That's not what I want to hear from Bo Jackson, man. Bo, stop it. You got 14 carries a game back in the old NFL. Now we think that he's going to be supersized Derrick Henry today. Stop it, Bo. I don't want this from Bo Jackson. I was very disappointed when this came across my timeline today that Bo Jackson out here sounding old on podcast.
Oh, I love it, and I believe it, and I've seen it. In fact, I've seen Bo go for 450, 500 yards and 8 touchdowns back in the day on my Game Boy and Super Tecmo Bowl. But yeah, in real life, no, there's no way that Bo Jackson would be doing that. Although he was kind of like a Toyota Tercel going down a football field, and you notice that not a lot of guys wanted to get in front of him even back then, when what he's saying isn't completely wrong when he says that tackling is much worse and guys shoulder tackle. That doesn't work with Bo Jackson. I think we've seen that. A guy like Derrick Henry, as you mentioned, has become probably the best, the most elite running back in the NFL by and large because of that same style. So if Bo would have just, like, piped back a little bit and said, I'd run for 200 yards a game, he'd probably still be off, but I'd go with it.
He no, said I'm not rolling with 400. It. This is the thing I don't like about Bo.
He said 350 or 400.
This is the thing I don't like about the generation before us. We give the older generation credit. Why can't they give this generation credit? Nobody takes away from Bo's athleticism. There's not a single young player today that ever comes out with the take that, hey, there's no way Michael Jordan could have played today. There's, you know, if we had Bo Jackson in today's NFL, he'd average 65 yards. You don't hear the young guys hating on the old guys. Why do we always have to hear the old guys hate on the young guys? Bo said he would have ran for 400 yards a game. He's telling me in today's NFL, 400 yards. Stop it. Why are we allowing Bo to do this because he's Bo Jackson?
All right, 400 is ridiculous. What
300 is ridiculous. 150 games a yard is ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
On the real, what do you think he would do? Because Bo in his prime, which was not long in the NFL, was great. And he's right, the tackling is bad and his style has kind of come back. I think that there's a chance that Bo Jackson would be a top 3 NFL running back if he came back right now. That 400 talk is crazy, but would he average maybe 5.5 yards per carry, 1,600 to 1,700 yards on the season, basically be Derrick Henry? I think there's a good chance.
Yeah, my question would just be, how long is he going to do it? Like, I don't doubt if Bo Jackson could do it for a year. I don't doubt if he could do it for two. Could he keep doing it over a prolonged period of time? Could he be a consistent back? Like, those backs just don't exist anymore. Like, we just live in a very different era. Like, Derrick Henry really might be the last of a breed. Like, the running back that you give the ball to 22 to 25 times, sometimes more, that workhorse back that you sort of build your offense around, like, those guys just don't exist anymore. That's just not
the
game today.
Don't forget, C-Dot, I mean, Bo Jackson also has a little side gig that, you know, played Major League Baseball. I've never seen Derrick Henry run up a wall or hit a home run in the All-Star game or anything like that, but I think that Bo Jackson today on the football field would be Derrick Henry.
Coming up next, we'll play a very simple game. I need one caller, 913-576-7610. We'll celebrate Halloween. Keep it locked in right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive, 610 Sports Radio.
Back in on The Drive, coming up at the bottom of the hour, we will be joined by Rich Gannon of CBS Sports. So, Halloween is right around the corner, and I want to help get you guys in the Halloween mood with a game that I like to call the IMDb game. Sean, I'm going to give you the rules. I am going to read to you the description of a very popular scary movie. I did not go obscure here. These are your A-plus Halloween scary movie titles. I have 6 on the board. If you go 4 out of 6, you win a pizza for the caller. If you get less than that, Rob gets the pizza. That's the rules. Are you ready to play the game, my friend?
Yeah.
I will even throw you this. In true Who Wants to Be a Millionaire fashion, if there is one that you do not know, I will allow the person, who is Eric, to help you out to give himself a better chance to win that pizza. Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah.
Rob, hit the music for the IMDb game. The first is a scary movie where a year after the murder of her mother, a teenage girl is terrorized by a new killer who targets the girl and her friends by using scary movies as part of a deadly game. A year after the murder of her mother, a teenage girl is terrorized by a new killer who targets the girl and her friends by using scary movies as part of a deadly game. Sean Levine, what movie is that?
Let's just go ahead and use the lifeline here because I have absolutely no idea.
All right. Eric, do you know what movie that is?
Scream.
That is the movie Scream. All right. Sean, I don't feel very confident your chance to win this game here if you couldn't get the Scream one. How are you feeling? Sean, you there?
Yeah, I got you. Sorry, I brought the dogs in my studio today, and that was a terrible idea.
All right. The next movie. There is a single mother who gives her son a much sought after doll for his birthday, only to discover that it is possessed by the soul of a serial killer. A single mother gives her son a much sought after doll for his birthday, only to discover that he is possessed by the soul of a serial killer.
Chucky, right?
You know what? I'm going to give it to you. It's called Child's Play, but I'll give it to you.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Child's
Play. I'll give it to you. You clearly knew. I'll give it to you. All right. The next movie. Three film students vanish after traveling into a forest to film a documentary, leaving only their footage behind. Three film students vanish after traveling into a forest to film a documentary, leaving only their footage behind. Sean Levine, you cannot use a lifeline. You're trying to win that pizza from the other place. What movie is that?
That's the Blair.
That is the Blair Witch Project. Continuing on in our game. Two strangers awaken in a room with no recollection of how they got there, and soon they discover that they're pawns in a deadly game perpetrated by a notorious serial killer. Sean, this is for the win. What's the name of that movie?
Can I get the language of origin?
Two strangers awaken in a room with no recollection of how they got there, and soon they discover they are pawns in a deadly game perpetrated by a notorious serial killer.
Is that The Cabin in the Woods?
That is not The Cabin in the Woods. That is Saw.
Oh, of course.
That is Saw.
Oh, wow. Give somebody the pizza.
I have a couple more to go.
Oh.
Next movie. In the summer of 1989, a group of bullied kids band together to destroy a monster, which disguises itself as a clown and preys on the children of this small town. In the summer of 1989, a group of bullied kids band together to destroy a shape-shifting monster which disguises itself as a clown and preys on the children of this small town.
Is that it?
That is the movie It. Sean, you are the winner of the IMDb game.
Is that right? I didn't think I had a chance in that one. Well, I'm feeling pretty good. I'd like to thank the Academy. I'd like to thank Carrington for inviting me. And most of all, I'd just like to thank my family for believing in me.
Give Eric the pizza. Eric is the winner of a pizza to the other place.
Give him the pizza.
Coming up in just a little bit, we'll catch up with Rich Gannon of CBS Sports. I want to share something with you that I'm not going to lie to you. I didn't really realize how much this saddened me. You know how they always say you never know that you have a good thing until it's gone? So today, I'm waking up and I'm searching the internet and I see that Taco Bell has removed the Mexican pizza from the menu. Now, I haven't gotten the Mexican pizza from Taco Bell in probably 7 years. It's not part of my go-to order anymore, but I at least like knowing that the option was there. It was trusty. It was reliable. Like, I don't get the quarter pounder very often, but I don't want McDonald's to get rid of the quarter pounder. It's part of what they're known for. Sean, how can Taco Bell, who maybe has the best fast food menu out of there, how can they be getting rid of staples like the Mexican pizza?
Well, they don't have the best fast food menu out there. We all know that's Wendy's, and it's been that way for a while, frankly. They got rid of the Nachos Bel Grande, I believe, earlier this year, and I think that there was actually a boycott outside of several of the Taco Bells wanting to bring it back. Now that they're getting rid of the Mexican pizza also, honestly, those were a couple of the premier items. Like, if I was going, Taco Bell's never been my personal favorite drive-thru, but the good thing about Taco Bell is it feels like it's open almost at all hours. So, you know, you had a couple of beers, you get the Uber driver, you get your friend, you take you by Taco Bell. The first thing I've always ordered is the Nachos Bel Grande. So if they don't have that or the Mexican pizza, honestly, I think I'm out.
I've always appreciated Taco Bell because it's open at any time of the day. So whenever you're hungry, where McDonald's might be closed, Wendy's might be closed, Burger King might be closed, but there's always a Taco Bell open. You can eat great even late. And there's no other place that you can get full on $3. I mean, at Taco Bell, you can get five tacos, cinnamon twist, and a drink for $3. You can't do that at Wendy's. You can't do that at McDonald's. McDonald's started with the dollar menu, and then every 6 months, they raised the price of it without telling us. I remember back in my day, you could get two McDoubles for $2 with no onions. Now try to get two McDoubles. It's like $7. What's going on, McDonald's? You sold me on this dollar menu idea, and then you guys got rid of the dollar menu without really telling us. Taco Bell would never. I'm telling you, go to Taco Bell right now with $3 and tell me how much food you get. That's why Taco Bell will always be loyal in my heart. And I can't believe that they're just going to take popular menu items. There's a lot of terrible things to take off of the Taco Bell menu. Not the Mexican pizza, Sean.
McDonald's has really, like you said, kind of crept up on us every day, every week, every year, just a little bit more. Their dollar menu becomes the $1.99 menu when nobody's looking, the middle of the night, kind of like when the Baltimore Ravens went to Cleveland or whatever it was, the Browns, the Colts, whatever the hell you know what I'm trying to talk about. Although, if you really think about it, where they've screwed us the most, when I grew back in my day, I remember you could get a number one meal. So that's always been my jam, right? Just the classic Big Mac fries and a Coke or whatever. And we all know how good the Coke is at McDonald's. It costs $3.99. I got the same thing last week, the exact same order, $9.61. I mean, it's unbelievable. So, yeah, I do appreciate that Taco Bell has generally, when they say that something's 99 cents, it stays 99 cents. So Steak and Shake is another place, though. Like, you're talking about being able to fill up on $4 or $5. You can get quite a good meal. Not a good meal. You can get quite a lot of food. Fill yourself up at Steak and Shake for $4 or $5.
Text line 913-576-7610. Someone asked about your dogs and how you got them out of your room.
Yeah, I gave them the voice. I'm not going to give you the voice right now. If you
I have a different voice for my dogs. It sounds like this.
Hi, Auntie Nashie, Daddy's home.
Yeah, that voice, so is that the one you're talking about?
Yeah, that's the one I did, and they got out, as you can tell.
Coming up next, we'll be joined by Rich Gannon of CBS Sports. We'll recap the Chiefs win over the Denver Broncos. We will try our best to avoid talking about the New York Jets because nobody should talk about the New York Jets. But there is a big game on Sunday between the Ravens and the Steelers. We'll get Rich Gannon's thoughts on it next. Stick around. It's The Drive.
The Drive. Weekdays 2 to 6.
Back in on The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the radio.com app. Coming up in about 30 minutes, we'll get to the top stories of the day in Kansas City. But as always, on Wednesdays at 4:30, we are very happy to be joined by our MVP, our All-Pro. He is also with CBS Sports. This week, he is on the call for the Broncos and the Chargers. We welcome Rich Gannon onto the show. Rich, always good talking football with you.
Trenty, great to be with you, brother. Looking forward to it.
So let's start here. Le'Veon Bell, last week we had a conversation these last couple of weeks about how much we thought Le'Veon Bell had left in the tank. I came out really encouraged by what I saw from him Sunday against the Broncos.
Yeah, I did too. And look, you know, he's got fresh legs. I thought it was interesting. I knew it was coming when I went back and watched it. When they put him out there the first time, I just said to myself, here comes the play action pass. I just know it. Andy Reid so well, and of course they hit on it. But you know, he commands a lot of attention, a lot of respect because of his abilities. And, you know, the first run, the 17-yard gallop, I mean, he's just gliding along. I mean, he's got such a smooth gait to him. You know, he reminds me a little bit of a different body type, but he reminds me a little bit of Eric Dickerson back in the day. When he gets rolling, he just doesn't, it's effortless, you know, and it just seems, he's such a smooth runner. He's got natural cutting ability and vision, and he sees the field so well. He's really good in the passing game. I mean, you look, go back to his days in Pittsburgh with Ben Roethlisberger. He catches a lot of balls. And I think he's going to be a great addition to what they already have with Edwards-Helaire. But, you know, the problem that they had the other day was, you know, they only had 51 snaps. You know, that's the problem. You know, time possession was a huge story in that game. I mean, I know the Chiefs got control of it early, but, you know, just 26 minutes of possession time, just the 51 plays, and you know, you're not going to get it done there. And, of course, you know, a lot had to do with their inability to convert a third down and of course, the sacks and the turnover. They've got a lot to clean up. You know, I think it's it says a lot about how good a team they are, even when they're not entirely healthy up front and they're not firing in all cylinders offensively. They're still able to go on the road in a division and get a win.
Rich, you mentioned that this team has some things to clean up. If you had to say what's the biggest things the Chiefs have to improve upon, what would your answer be?
I think continuity along the front would help. I mean, there was some communication breakdowns. I mean, you know, you look at the sacks a couple times, you had guys running clean without, you know, even, you know, a body assigned to them. Again, there's certain times where you're going to be one short in a protection scheme. But I know one time I watched Mahomes throw the ball hot to Edwards-Helaire. He didn't have his head around. He wasn't even looking for it. He wasn't even anticipating it. So there's some things as you study it week in and week out that, you know, you can tell they're not playing as well as they have in the past. I think a lot of it has to do with the protections, and that's not all on the offensive line. Some of it has to do with the backs involved in the protection scheme. Some of it has to do with Patrick Mahomes, just in terms of communicating, redirecting the line, audibling, getting out of a bad play into a better one. So I think there's plenty of blame to go around, but they've got some things to clean up. I think it starts with playing a little bit better up front.
This is a situation that you found yourself in, and this is being billed as a revenge game for Le'Veon Bell with everything that's happened with him and the Jets over the last 3 weeks. What's your mentality if you're a player like Le'Veon Bell going against your former team?
I don't think it's going to be that huge of an issue because I think he's got so much on his plate, just learning this new system, trying to get comfortable, just trying to fit in and just, you know, really trying to make an impact. I know this game's important to him. I know he wants to, you know, be that guy again, like he was in Pittsburgh. I think what he went through with the Jets, I think it has humbled him. You know, I think that was a very difficult. You know, he had the long holdout, didn't play well last year. This year, not so good either. And again, it's in fairness, I'd say so much of what happens at that position is impacted by what's going on around. The offensive line hasn't been very good there. They've had, you know, challenges with trying to develop the young quarterback, play calling, all that. And he just never really felt – I never really felt like they had anyone around him. I just remember doing some of their games last year. It was just tackle the back, and that's all you got to do. You're not worried about anybody else. Jamison Crowder, who's not even healthy right now, but he's really their best weapon in the passing game. They don't get a lot of production out of the tight end position. So I think in fairness to the back, Le'Veon Bell, they get 8-9 guys around the line of scrimmage every play and just not let him be a difference maker. And that's too hard. That's too hard on any back.
Right now we're talking to Rich Gannon. He is with CBS Sports. He is on the call for Broncos and Chargers. We're talking a little Kansas City Chiefs football right now. What would you say this offense could potentially do to open things up for Tyreek Hill? Because he's one of the fastest players in the NFL. He's used to those explosive big plays, and defenses have sort of taken it away. What would you do if you're reading Mahomes to open that back up for Hill?
I think you have to keep moving him around in formations. I think you got to hide him. You got to get him into some bunch sets, some stack releases, help him get off the press. And also, I think, move him around so that he's not necessarily outside the numbers all the time. You got him inside. You got to motion him. He's running all those crossing routes, which he's so good at. He caught 6 balls in the game for 55 yards, had a touchdown, but they're modest numbers for a player like that. Now, in fairness, he commands a lot of attention, and I think teams really go out of their way to address number 10 and number 87. I mean, you look at it, and that's all they talk about during the week. We visit with these defensive coordinators, and they say, hey, look, you're not going to let the Kelce, the tight end, we're not going to let him be a factor in the red zone. We're not going to let him be a factor in the middle of the field. We're going to do everything we can to double him. And then you're doing the same thing with Tyreek Hill at times. You're rotating coverage, you're cutting coverage, you're getting a flat defender to run back up underneath the out and in breaking routes. You're doing everything you can help the corners. And I think I think you've got to find ways to get some of your best players more touches. And I know Andy Reid is so with his scheme and some of the things that they try and do. But at some point, and you're Patrick Mahomes, you can't force the issue. This is a week that you cannot force the issue. Unlike other teams, and the Jets play a lot of too deep zone coverage, and it's going to really force Patrick Mahomes to be patient, to work the ball underneath. It's going to be a catch and run type of game. And it's not they don't play a lot of man to man coverage. So that's going to be a challenge, I think, for the quarterback just to exercise some patience. There's not going to be a lot of shots down the field, big 30, 40, 50-yard shots against this Jets defense. They've got challenges. They've got issues, the Jets do. But they do a pretty good job of keeping things in front of them.
So speaking of the New York Jets, not many people watched last week's game between the Buffalo Bills and the New York Jets, but it was something you kind of kept an eye on because the Jets kept it closer than a lot of people had anticipated. Why was that game so close? And looking at this week, do you think that's something that the Jets could potentially replicate against Kansas City?
Well, they're desperate for a win, right? They're a winless team. They're playing within the division against the Bills. They've got some history there, some familiarity. And they got off to a good start, something they haven't done all year. I mean, the quarterback came out, Sam Darnold. He had missed the last couple of games with a shoulder injury. He looked sharp early. They hit on a couple plays. Defensively, they did a nice job getting off the field on third down. They forced a red zone turnover. In fact, they held the Bills. The Bills didn't punt in the game, and they settled for 8 field goals. I think that's what happened in that game. So, you know, and still found a way to win the game. So, you know, they did a nice job, I think, you know, once they crossed midfield, the Jets did, to really, you know, kind of stymie the Bills. And I think you're going to see a lot of that. They play a lot of zone coverage. They try and keep, you know, bend but don't break type of philosophy. But at the end of the day, I mean, they just don't have the horses. They just don't have the personnel right now. They're not very good on offense. They have a difficult time running the ball. The offensive line's not very good. The quarterback's been very inconsistent. If the Chiefs do what they do, this game shouldn't be close.
You were calling the Broncos and the Chargers game. Let's talk about those two quarterbacks in that game respectively, because we just saw Drew Lock go against the Kansas City Chiefs, and the Chiefs face Herbert in his first start this year. Let's start with Herbert. I think he has a chance to be a star. He's a much better quarterback than I thought he was going to be this early in his career. I really like how athletic he is. He's a big, tall guy, strong guy, can make a lot of the plays on the field. He has it. Like, you can describe it as a former quarterback, but when I watch Justin Herbert for the Chargers, he just seems to have it.
He does. He's impressive. I mean, first and foremost, he's really a smart guy. You know, if you go back and study him, I think he was a biology major in college. His brother is a med student at Columbia. You know, the kid's smart. I mean, he's got a high football IQ. I think it comes, you know, he works at it, but he's a quick learner. He doesn't look or play or act like a rookie. And he's made good decisions for the most part. You know, they haven't won a lot of games with him playing. He got his first win last week, but they've been in a lot of games. He throws for 300 yards every week. You know, Keenan Allen's a big, obviously a big factor, but he's got very strong arm. He's got, you know, he doesn't throw the ball as well in the move like Patrick Mahomes does, but he's got a real good arm. He can throw it way down the field. Good mobility for a bigger quarterback. He's 6'6", he's 235 pounds, and he can move, and he will run with the ball. On third down, down in the red zone, they even have a couple designed runs for him. It's a little bit like Josh Allen of the Bills that way. And, you know, I just think he gets better each week. I think he's going to be a really good one. I think Joe Burrow is going to be a good one. They have some of the same qualities and characters that you like at that position. But he's been very, very impressive.
So you talk about how much you like Burrow. You also talk about how much you like Justin Herbert. Where are you at on Drew Lock? Because on the flip side, I just haven't seen it from Lock. That I understand his situation is not ideal. But with Herbert, you're seeing that spark. With Burrow, you're seeing that spark. I don't really see it with Drew Lock. I think his ceiling is relatively low. Where do you stand on the Broncos' second-year quarterback?
I think the jury's still out on him, Carrington. I would agree. I think he's got a lot of ground to make up on some of these other young quarterbacks. Turnovers continue to be a problem. He turned it over twice last week, as you know, against the Chiefs. Turned it over twice the week before to win over the Patriots. If you really study him going back to his days at Missouri, and I know a lot of Chief fans are familiar with him, you know, he didn't have a great offensive line, spent a lot of time in the shotgun, but he also had some problems turning the football over to get straightened out. And in fairness, you know, without, you know, that he played some games this year without Lindsey, they've had some significant injuries. Cortland Sutton hasn't played since week 2 against the Steelers. So they've got some real issues that they've got to work out. The offensive line's not great, but he's got to play better. And I think a lot of it has to do with the decision-making and footwork. There are two areas of his game, when you really study Drew Lock, that he can get better, that he has to get cleaned up.
The big game in the AFC and the NFL this week is the Pittsburgh Steelers playing the Baltimore Ravens. Where do you stand on both of those teams, and which team do you have winning that matchup?
This is going to be a great one. And anytime these two teams get together, you know, you can expect a lot of fireworks. The quarterbacks are a big story. Ben Roethlisberger, a little bit greedy last week, threw three interceptions in the win over the Titans. But he's got a great defense in his hip pocket. They're able to run the football. They've got some real playmakers at the wide receiver position. I just like how they're playing right now. They're undefeated for a reason. They're a good team. If Ben will just stay in his lane and not get careless with the football. On the other side of it, another team that's got a really good defense. They really can confuse you and get after you on third down. It's really where they thrive and make a lot of their big plays. It's a defense that is really built on, you know, affecting the quarterback and taking the ball away. And they do as good a job of that as any team in football. And of course, when you get on the other side of it with the quarterback, Lamar Jackson, I mean, you know, Carrington, you've watched him. I mean, he's just unusual. I guess that's the best way to describe him. He's got rare skill and talent at that position. When you look at his athleticism, his ability to improvise and escape and create and extend plays. Not the most accurate guy throwing the ball from the pocket, but they try and mask and they try and cover that up as much as they can with their scheme. And, of course, in the kicking game, maybe one of the better special teams units in football. They've got probably the best kicker in the game. They've got a great punter. They've got a head coach that used to be a special teams coordinator. They spent a lot of their time in that department. And this will be a great game. This is going to be a tough one to call when you look at the Steelers and the Ravens when they get together.
I think most people would put both of those teams in the category of Super Bowl contenders. You obviously would put Kansas City in that category as well. What other teams would you say through the first 7 weeks of the season heading into Week 8 that you would consider to be legitimate Super Bowl contenders?
Oh, man. Let's start with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I think that, you know, you look at how well Brady has played the last couple of weeks. You look at that defense. Former Chief Tom Bowles has done a great job with that group. And I just think that, you know, Brady is just, he looks like he's throwing the ball as well as he did 10 years ago. So I like the Buccaneers over there. I don't know how good the Packers are defensively. The Seattle Seahawks, I think, are the best team in the West, although I think the Cardinals are closing some ground on them. But, you know, the Russell Wilson right now is playing like an NFL MVP. I don't think there's anyone in the NFC East, Carrington, that you have to worry about. But you look at the AFC, I don't think anyone in the AFC East is going to, you know, create any issues for the Chiefs. I think you look at those two teams, Steelers and Ravens, in the North. In the South, it's the Titans. But you know, they had their issues with the Steelers last week, but don't count out the Titans. And the Chiefs are very familiar with the Tennessee Titans. This is a team that I think has taken on the personality of their head coach. You know, Mike Vrabel is a tough, disciplined player, and I think he's kind of built that team that way. There's no give up in that group. You know, they've been behind in a lot of games. But since Ryan Tannehill took over Week 7 a season ago, this has been one of the more competitive teams in football. I'm not so sure they're good enough yet defensively, but with that running back and the way the quarterback's playing, they're a tough out.
That is our quarterback. That is our MVP and our All-Pro. He is also on the call for CBS Sports this weekend for Broncos and Chargers. Always good to talk football with Rich Gannon. Rich, really appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on today.
Thanks, brother.
Always good to catch up with our quarterback, Rich Gannon, to take a look at the NFL. It's sort of weird the way that the NFL and the contenders are sort of set up. Obviously, Pat's one of the younger QBs in the league. He solidified. Lamar, he solidified, but in a very different way, and he still has a major question to answer. Russell Wilson, who I think is going to win NFL MVP, he solidified. And then there's like a gap between where those three are and then the older quarterbacks in the league where you're asking yourself, can they hold up later in the year? Can Ben Roethlisberger play at a high level in December and January? Same thing for Tom Brady. Same thing for Drew Brees if the Saints are going to put themselves in the Super Bowl conversation. I think we sort of have an idea of who the top 6 to 8 teams are and who their quarterbacks are. But for some of the good teams in the NFC, it's really, can their quarterback hold up for the remaining 10 to 12 weeks?
I think the NFC is incredibly wide open. Honestly, like if I told you that Arizona wins that division, you'd go, yeah, that's not that surprising. If I told you that Green Bay doesn't end up winning that division because they slip, and obviously if they don't win, it would have to be Chicago. At this point, that wouldn't be absolutely shocking. I mean, we don't know who's going to win that putrid NFC East. The NFC's weird. If you told me the Rams ended up in the Super Bowl, if you told me the Seahawks ended up in the Super Bowl, literally there's like six, seven different answers, I think. And the AFC, I think it's down to three. Now, it wouldn't be completely inconceivable. What movie is that from? Inconceivable. Princess Bride. It wouldn't be completely inconceivable for one of those other teams to get there. Let's say the Titans found their way there. Let's say, actually, Buffalo, that's too much of a long shot. The Titans are the only, I guess, outsider. Like, if you want to say there's four teams with the Titans, the Steelers, the Chiefs, and the Ravens, I'm cool with that. But I just... something about the Titans, I'd be very surprised if they actually went on and won a Super Bowl. But if we look back, it's February 20th, whatever, and we look back a week after the Super Bowl, I won't be that surprised if we're talking about the Chiefs, the Steelers, or the Ravens. If it's anybody else in the AFC, I'll be pretty surprised.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I think Tennessee's a good team. I don't know if they're at the same caliber of those other three teams that you alluded to. In the NFC, I'm with you that it's wide open. I think it's between, like, if we're, like, narrowing down the list, Seattle, Arizona, Los Angeles, Green Bay, Tampa Bay is probably the list. Chicago cannot win a Super Bowl with that quarterback play. I don't think the Saints can win a Super Bowl with the quarterback play that they have right now. That's it. I think it's a little bit of a stretch for Arizona. I don't like Kyler Murray as much as you like Kyler Murray, but I certainly understand keeping them in the conversation. But that's it. I mean, if we really want to cast a wide net, there's eight teams that we would consider to be realistic Super Bowl contenders. Seattle, Arizona, Los Angeles in the NFC, Green Bay, Tampa Bay, and then those three teams that you alluded to in the AFC. I just can't see a scenario in which a Super Bowl contender emerges outside of that eight.
Yeah, and in the NFC, I think you need to ask yourself, what team has the fewest flaws? Because in the AFC, you can play the game of who's actually the best with the experience and the quarterback and the coach. In the NFC, there's so many teams that I think you can just throw in a hat and pull it out and see which name you get. That's going to come down to kind of those little things. And I would say the answer to that question is Tampa Bay. They're probably the team right now that's starting to appear with the fewest flaws, because heading into the season, I mean, they had two major questions, right? Could Tom Brady hold up? Like, was he going to be average, above average? How good was he going to be? And he's playing like a top five quarterback, so you can check that off. And then the defense. The defense last year was the worst in the league. They gave up the most points, and now they've gave up the fewest points, so you can check that off. So now that we know those two things are solved at least halfway through the season, I think that Tampa Bay, and I know you and I have kind of come around at different times, I knew that Brady wasn't completely done. You said he was washed up and dead and done. And now you've kind of said, okay, I was wrong about that. I admit Tampa's the real deal. I don't know if I've come around to that. I've come around. I'm not that surprised that Tom Brady's this good. But what I call Tampa the favorite right now, let's say that they played Seattle on a neutral field in the NFC Championship game, I think I'm still taking Russell Wilson in Seattle.
I wouldn't pick Seattle in that scenario. Just I think Tampa Bay is the favorite in the NFC, because – I think if we're making your list of who the most complete teams are in the NFL, I think it's between Kansas City, Pittsburgh, and Tampa Bay. And you can kind of flip a coin on where you land on those three teams. Like, Tampa Bay has allowed 142 points this year. Seattle has given up 172 in this, where, I mean, I just think that Tampa Bay's defense is significantly better than where Seattle's is. Seattle is on pace to give up more yards than any team in the history of the NFL. So if you're telling me you're going to put up a team like Tampa Bay's offense that maybe they're not elite, but they can certainly score points, and you're putting them up against Seattle, and you're also going to put Russell up against that defense, I actually think Tampa Bay wins that game. They went against the Green Bay Packers and smacked them around. I think Arizona's probably a year away. To me, Arizona's in that same place that Kansas City was back in 2018. That Arizona's going to have a good year. They're going to go 11-5, 12-4, and then next year is going to be the year that we take them seriously as a Super Bowl contender. But I'm not maybe fully ready to jump in the pool with them quite just yet. I think it's probably five Super Bowl contenders where you maybe have it as eight.
Brady needs to figure out a way to stay out of the cold weather. And obviously, if his team ends up the number one seed, then the Super Bowl's in Tampa Bay, so going through Tampa Bay would be a really good way to do that. But it kind of feels like with me with Tom Brady, I'm not ready to say that, well, yeah, he's still a top five quarterback in the league, and you know, everybody that said this was wrong, I think that's clearly the answer so far. Like, through seven games, nobody could argue. Tom Brady's been, even me, I tried to tell you guys that Tom Brady wasn't done or dead or washed, but I didn't think he was going to be this good. I didn't think his arm was going to look this strong. But we're seven games in. Let's wait until he goes to a couple of maybe these cold weather cities. Let's wait until he's got 16 games plus a couple of playoff games, and that's when the Chiefs might end up playing them in a Super Bowl. What Tom Brady would they be facing at that point? So, again, if it's Russell Wilson at that point, I know what he's going to be. Tom Brady, I don't. In that game, I'd take Seattle. But if it's not Seattle, it's not Tampa Bay, I'm not going to be that surprised. Again, the NFC, to me, it's a crapshoot right now.
Coming up next, we'll get to the top stories of the day in Kansas City. Keep it locked in right here. It's The Drive.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.